Hi, this is Sean Walker from Sky and Telescope, and I'm on the phone with Anthony Wesley in Murrum Bateman, New South Wales, Australia. Anthony's, well, pretty famous for discovering not one, but two impacts on Jupiter. So, Anthony, I'm curious, how did you end up focusing on planets for your observing projects and imaging?
Hi, Sean. Good to talk to you. Planets are fascinating things. They're different pretty much every time you look at them. You know, they change through the year. They move through the sky from year to year into different constellations. There's not very much known about them. So, you know, a lot of cases where we can take high-resolution pictures of the planets nowadays with new telescopes, we can see things that really aren't understood very well by the science community. And it's really just a whole lot of fun to keep watching these things and photographing these things in our solar system, because it just hasn't been done at these sort of high resolutions in the past.
Yeah, I believe that's with the advancements in new cameras and affordable equipment for amateurs. I'm just curious, when you're recording the planets each night, do you actually watch the videos as they're coming down, or do you let it go and go off and make yourself a sandwich and come back and move on to your next target?
Well, I wish I could go off and make a sandwich while it was recording, but that's not the way it works. No, I spend all of my time watching the video screen, primarily to check that the focus is absolutely correct. And that changes through the night. In fact, it changes fairly steadily as the ambient temperature drops and the telescope changes size slightly as the metal cools and contracts, and also trying to judge the scene conditions overhead to see whether the scene conditions are good or bad. And on top of that, the field of view of my camera is so small that, you know, Jupiter takes up about two-thirds of my CCD while I'm recording. And it only takes a small amount of wind and other things for that to move around, and there's always the danger that it could actually get lost off the CCD. So now, with all of these things, I spend all of my time while I'm recording watching the computer screen in as much detail as I can, just to try to keep on top of it.
Wow. I noticed that you use a monochrome camera with color filters. Is there any benefit to that over shooting with, say, a color camera?
Well, I think there is. If you're using a color camera, then you're pretty much stuck with the red, green, and blue filters that are fitted onto the CCD on that camera. You can't really then do any infrared or ultraviolet or any other narrowband imaging outside of the visual spectrum. And for Jupiter and for Saturn, it's quite important to be able to do imaging in some of the non-visual bands. For example, on Jupiter, if I'd had, in 2009, a filter that, a very narrowband filter that passed the methane band of 890 nanometers, then I could have verified for myself that what I was seeing was an impact on Jupiter. Instead, I had to wait 24 hours until the guys at NASA could actually verify that for me by using one of these 890 nanometer filters. But since then, I've bought one, and it's in my filter wheel. So if anything like that happens again, this time I'll be able to verify it straight away. But you need a monochrome camera for that. In other words, a camera that doesn't have a fixed set of color filters in front of it, so that you can choose your own set of filters, including the non-visual filters.
Oh, yes. Speaking of filters, are you using a particular set that's matching the spectral characteristics of your CCD?
Well, I've tried a few different filter sets over the years. I don't really have to try to match the characteristics of the filter to the CCD, because all of the processing that we do in video astronomy afterwards, there are so many steps involved where the color balance is lost anyway, that pretty much at the end of the day we have to reset the color balance by hand when we're reassembling the color image at the end. So I don't assume that the color weightings are going to just be preserved all the way through the processing that I do, because that never happens.
True.
So really all I'm looking for are filters that have got nice sharp cutoffs, don't get too much bleeding from one color band into the other, and also filters that have our transmission as close to 100% as possible. And in the modern world, there are a couple of different filter sets that match those characteristics. And I'm using the Astrodon series at the moment of filters, and I'm very happy with those. But I have used the Astronomic filters in the past, and I know other people that actually mix and match filters from different sets to try to get exactly the right sort of matching between the filters so that they don't overlap too much, and also you get the maximum transmission.
Oh, yes. Besides your camera, on your telescope, are you using a go-to setup? Or, I mean, I realize the planets are pretty bright, so they're not terribly hard to find.
Yeah, I've got an interesting setup. The main camera that I use for recording data has a very small field of view. So even though I've got a go-to mount, I've got a Losmandy Titan that I can tell to go to Jupiter or Saturn, it's not accurate enough to put that into the field of view of this main camera. So I have on one of my finderscopes on this telescope, I've got another one of these video cameras, very similar setup, a Firewire video camera, but this one's running at a much lower data rate. It's only 3 or 4 frames per second off this camera, and it's also on a wide field view of the sky. So when I sit down at the computer, down at the observatory, I see two camera feeds, the one from my main camera that I'm going to record data from, and also I see a feed from this wide-angle finderscope camera, and that's the one that shows me the planet and the sky around it. So even if I do lose the planet off the main camera, it'll still be there in this finderscope camera, and I can just use that to bring it back to the center.
Well, that's a great time saver. Any other special modifications you've performed to your equipment to make it ideal for shooting the planets?
Well, not so much for shooting planets specifically, but I'm a great fan of Newtonian telescopes because they're very simple optically, and you've got almost the least number of surfaces involved. You know, I've been using Newtonian telescopes for all of my recent work since 2003. I like them, but they do have some issues around collimation, and most of the issues are just that the traditional way of setting up the secondary and the primary mount for collimation is not really very user-friendly. So I've made some modifications to the telescope to make collimation a little bit easier, and these are things that I think anybody who's interested in making their life a bit simpler can have a go at. Also, I guess one thing that's useful is that I've replaced the tube of the telescope with an aluminium tube. And this is very thin wall sheet aluminium that's been rolled up to make the tube. And aluminium has some very nice thermal properties so that it tracks the temperature of the ambient air and you don't get cold air current running down the inside of the tube like you can get with steel tubes or painted tubes.
Excellent. How long do you record your videos when you're shooting, say, the different planets?
Well, you're limited a little bit depending on which planet you're looking at. If I'm looking at Jupiter, then 3 minutes is how much time I allocate from the start to the finish of a recording that's going to make a single image. So that's 1 minute through each of the red, green, and blue filters. And for last year, I was recording that at about 60 frames a second, thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would end up with something like 5.5 gigabytes of data after those 3 minutes has finished. And all that data would end up being reduced down to a single color image at the end.
Yeah. So you must have a pretty large hard drive on your computer there to deal with all the images each night.
Yeah, it's quite feasible some nights to use up more than 100 gigabytes. Sometimes I've used up to 200 or 300 gigabytes in space, which is pretty much a whole hard drive. But luckily, hard drives are getting larger every year and faster, which is just as well because the rate that I'm increasing the recording speed and also the volume of data that I'm using is just about keeping up with the way that hard drives are getting larger and faster.
Wow. Do you actually save all your videos, or do you just pick and choose the particularly interesting ones?
No, I do save it all. I have in my archive here at home a whole bunch of 1 and 2 terabyte hard drives holding compressed copies of all the videos that I've taken since I started in 2003. I don't really know how much data that is, but it would be something on the order of 10 or 20 terabytes worth of compressed data. I keep a hold of it because I'm noticing that as time goes by and we get better at doing this process, we can extract more and more data out of old videos. So it's useful to have the videos there. So in the future, if some new magic software tool comes up, I can go back and reprocess some of my old videos. And also, you never know, there has been times when a request has just come out of the blue for an image of Jupiter or Saturn or Mars, you know, from a certain date, and I can just go and look back through the videos and see if I've got something there.
Nice. Do you have any other tips for planetary observers who are potentially might want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, I think really the biggest thing is just to know your equipment and spend a lot of time outside recording, because you end up really getting a good understanding of how the atmosphere behaves above you. You know, it's quite strange that as a video astronomer, you end up almost becoming more of a meteorologist than you do an astronomer, because you're spending all of your time looking at videos of the planets, but you're seeing it through the Earth's atmosphere. And the Earth's atmosphere behaves in lots of different ways, almost all of them bad, as far as we're concerned. But if you get enough time out under the sky watching how the planet appears and watching how the atmosphere is affecting it, you can really start to get a feel for what nights are going to be good and what nights are going to be bad, and really what good quality data looks like. Because unless you're out there looking a lot, then the chances are that you're not going to catch the nights when there's really great seeing. And there's just such a big difference between the poor quality data that you get on most average nights and just those one or two nights every year of spectacular, wonderful seeing. You really need to make sure you catch those nights.
Nice. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Anthony. And I wish you luck in the future. Hopefully we'll hear some more amazing discoveries from you pretty soon.
All right, thanks, Sean.